I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 181. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks, Griff. Good to be back.
Busy week.
It is a busy week.
We should just name this a segment. This
busy,
is
the, busy week.
Yeah, it's the busy week segment. Yeah.
Well, it's a little extra busy. I don't know why.
Really?
Seems like things are just like lots of stuff going on.
Mm. I drove in this morning or this afternoon. I noticed there were a lot of cars in the parking lot. So it looks like a return to normal. So,
well, somewhat. No more mask requirement inside the office here.
Right. Interesting.
I think also the thing that makes it a little busy for me this week is I do one thing every once in a while that's a lot of fun. But, you know, it only takes an hour out of the week, but it's an absolute blast. Is with new employees that come onto campus, we invite some sellers in to talk to those new employees.
Oh.
And I get the honor of actually being able to host that discussion.
Oh, that is fun.
It's a lot. You've done it in the past.
I have done
it.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, this, like I had a few other phone calls with sellers this week on things that just, you know, it's one of those things, they just come up and they take a little bit of time. You want to get them to the right person.
These are people who have your phone number?
Yes.
You give your phone number out.
I do.
He's such a great guy.
I bet people, if they did a Google search, could probably find it. I'm sure someone from way back when who was really disgruntled with me with something I did with feedback had posted it and said, please call this guy and tell him what you think.
Oh, dear. Let's hope that no one finds that one.
We're here for our sellers.
We're here for their benefit. We hope. We hope that we're beneficial here at the podcast.
We want them to be successful. What's this week's topic du jour?
This week, we're going to explore in particular where the reports are, what they are on Seller Hub, and what they contain, and how you can create a report and then use it for your business, like paying your taxes.
Given how much we've expanded that reporting area with over the last couple of years, you could do a whole series.
Yeah. And then we'll talk about the idea of, with that information, putting together a system that makes it easy for those of you who may have a little bit of a fear and trepidation about paperwork and how to put reports together and how to compile that information so that you can be doing it during the year on a regular basis and not like faced with everything at the end of the year or a month before taxes.
Which is smart, makes it a lot easier at the end of the year.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. And then we have a special guest.
Oh, great. Yeah. Who's the guest? Well, or do I have to wait?
Well, it's somebody you know. It's somebody on our team, but located in a different city who works for a different organization, but works in community. And he's somebody that I lean on a lot for answers. So
great.
We're going to bring him on. He's going to answer a question.
I know who it is, I bet.
It's not going to be a surprise for you, no. But in the meantime, let's take a look at the news before we start our topic du jour.
So we have a couple news items this week. Our eBay CMO and VP of Seller Community of North America, Andrea Stairs, posted an announcement last week about the different ways you can stay in touch with your fellow sellers and eBay, including an update on eBay Open for 2022, which I'm sure our sellers will want to go read.
Yeah, I've got a lot of questions on that.
In addition to Open, we have a calendar of seller check-ins, seller spotlights, the ever-popular seller-led meetings and meetups, and of course, a nice mention of the eBay for Business podcast.
And the eBay for Business page on Facebook as well, yeah.
In other news, eBay continues to monitor the crisis in Ukraine and has posted updates on the announcement board. eBay has put seller protections in place for sellers with items heading to the area, as well as for sellers in impacted locations. We've also done some direct communication to sellers in those areas for some additional things that we're doing that are really specific to the sellers. But check out the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements.
Yeah, and there's actually some information on that announcement about what you can do to help as well.
Yes, so good point.
You've got some questions about ways that you can assist with aid to the citizens of Ukraine. There's some information there.
And I think in the coming weeks, they are going to need a lot of aid.
Yeah.
So anything folks can do, I'm sure will be appreciated.
Absolutely. So we're going to take a look at using reports from Seller Hub, and we'll meet a new correspondent. Let's get started.
Sounds great.
Brian.
What?
Do you know what the word papyroergophobia means?
Holy moly. Never heard of it. But it has phobia at the end, so I suppose it means fear of something.
Correct. By the way, did you take Latin in high school?
No, but I did go to a Latin-named high school.
Oh, good. So that might help.
Modern day.
Okay.
I'll let all our listeners tell me what that means.
Okay, good. Either way, we may be able to figure out the meaning of the word papyroergophobia if we break it down. You know what I mean? So what do you think the first part of that word might mean? It's papyro.
Well, it sounds like papyrus.
Mm-hmm. And papyrus is an early form of?
I know this one. I've been to Egypt, so I actually have some papyrus.
Oh, good for you.
And so I know what it is. It's paper.
Yes, it's paper. Correct.
So fear of paper.
Well, not quite just paper. What does the word ergo mean?
In Latin?
No, in Greek.
But I thought we were talking about Latin.
Well, we were, but now it's on to Greek. You studied Greek, didn't you?
Not the language, just Homer. And not Homer Simpson.
Okay. Good. Well, good, because neither did I. But thanks to the power of Google, I was able to determine that, although the Latin word ergo means therefore in Latin, as in, for example, cogito ergo sum.
I think therefore I am.
Excellent. But let's not put the horse before Descartes.
Oh, great. Griff, that was bad.
I know.
Sorry. Again, I fell for that.
Well, you did. And moving on, the Greek form of the word ergo actually means something different than therefore.
Wait, I thought this was this podcast about selling.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned to dead language podcast. Is there a point to all of this?
Yes, there is. Bear with me. So the Greek word ergo means?
Give me a hint.
Well, think ergonomics.
Efficiency in the workplace or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Like, this desk is right for me ergonomically or something like that.
Well, you're very close.
I think I prefer ego.
No.
Okay, does ergo mean workplace?
So very close. Drop the place.
So ergo is Greek for work.
Gold star for you, Brian. Well, okay, so given what we know now.
C minus, given how much it took me to get there.
It was like pulling teeth, but you know, you've got a lot of them. So what do you think the word papyroergophobia means now?
Fear of paperwork.
Bingo.
So now it's a podcast about weird phobias, Dr. Freud.
I wished we'd have content for a decade if that were the case. No, it's still all about selling and running a business on eBay, but guess how that relates to the word papyroergophobia?
I think I know where this is going.
You do?
The time of year.
Okay.
It's tax time.
That's right. The tax filing deadline for 2021 is April 18th. And that is just a little more than a month away as we record this.
And taxes or getting ready for filing taxes is a subject that strikes fear and loathing in the hearts of many eBay sellers.
Especially those like me. Yes, I admit it. My name is Griff, and I'm a papyroergophobic.
Hi, Griff.
I'm at a meeting. And like any phobia, we can overcome it with some focus and dedication and a plan. And that's what this segment is about. It's not about how to file your taxes.
Which is good, because we really aren't qualified to give tax advice.
Absolutely. And for that, you're going to need to work directly with qualified tax professionals, as we say many times here on the podcast. But we can tackle a big part of the fear and dread that many sellers experience when it's time for tax preparation. And that's getting everything together and organizing it.
I do know that running a successful business is dependent on the owner of the business keeping complete and organized business records, like receipts, bank statements, expenses, and so on.
That's exactly right. And every smart business person should have some type of system in place to make sure that their business records are organized and complete and that they're getting that information on a regular basis. Creating a system of record keeping or bookkeeping is not really that difficult if you keep it simple and if you manage it on a regular schedule.
And the first step to creating a simple, or maybe not even just a simple system, but a system for business data collection and organization is knowing what information to keep and how and where to store it.
Yeah. Brian, you and I have been around eBay for over two decades now. Remember how little information eBay used to provide sellers regarding their businesses?
We basically had an invoice once a month.
Yeah, that was it. And what information was available was also divided between eBay and our partner at the time.
That's right. PayPal.
Yeah.
It was split both of them up.
Yeah. So you had to do a lot of hunting to find the information you needed.
And we also didn't retain like listing information for a long period of time. So if you were trying to retain it, you would have to be capturing it on an ongoing basis.
Let's just say it was not easy. I was going to say it was a nightmare, but that might be hyperbole.
Almost as hard as uploading a photo back then.
Don't even get me started.
I think we digressed.
We did. You know, today we talk about reports all the time. And with the various reports in Seller Hub now, a seller's entire eBay selling activity for the previous year is right there at their fingertips.
And the information in those reports is an important part of your business data collection system.
Yeah.
So let's start with eBay reports, because really the information in your reports will prove invaluable when it's time to start preparing your tax filing.
Mm-hmm.
And Griff, We've talked about the report feature in past episodes. Shall we review them here?
You know, given the amount of email and the types of questions I'm getting, I thought it would be a good idea. That's why we're having this segment.
And now because eBay tracks and records all this information for a seller, that's one less thing to be, I'm going to destroy it, papyroergophobic.
Yes.
First off, tell us where to go to find the right reports for bookkeeping and filing taxes.
Yeah, and I know a lot of sellers already know this, but I'm getting a lot of questions about this. That's why we're doing this. So you have to start at Seller Hub. And if you don't know how to get to Seller Hub by now, it's okay. You just click on My eBay and then scroll down to Selling. I wish that said Seller Hub, by the way. It doesn't. And that Selling link will take you to Seller Hub. And then when you're there, there are report types in Seller Hub of various nature, and you should explore them all. But for our purposes, we need to focus on the reports available on what's called the payments page on Seller Hub. So click that first.
And as always, we will put links to the right pages in the transcript for episode 181.
Let's walk through the steps, by the way, because there's a way once you're on this page, you can pick the type of report, for example, and then a date range, and that's important. So my recommendation for an overall record of all of your transactions for a period of time, like say last year, is to select the transaction type. There's also a payout report, and you can generate one of those, but the transaction report's going to have more detailed information. Make sure you select all statuses. That's one of the other options in a drop-down box there. And then transaction types, I select all. I want to see them all. And then the all-important date range. And my advice for if you're using this for tax purposes is to select January 1st, 2021 to December 31st, 2021. And that'll capture every day in last year. So you got all that information.
You basically get the entire year in that report.
Yeah. And before you generate the report, I'd also recommend that you click the Customize Column Settings link. The default is to include all the data for each transaction, which may be more than you need. You can uncheck or check boxes for each of the different data columns to add or subtract them from the report. I tend to include them all, and it's probably wise for you to do so for your first report so you can see how each one of these columns displays. You can always change what data you display or hide for each report prior to generating it. So if you do another one, and it doesn't cost any money, it's free.
Right.
You're not wasting paper. So you can always regenerate these same reports.
So if a seller's wanting to create a report for filing taxes for 2021, they may want to create a transaction report for all types of transactions with the time frame January 1st, 2021 to December 31st, 2021.
You can also choose your own date ranges if you need to. In any case, when you've selected the date range, then you just click the Create Report button and wait.
And wait for what?
The report. It can take a few minutes to generate depending, well, you know, on the volume of sales for the year. Now, mine, when I just generated, took about 15 seconds because there were only about 400 transactions in total for my selling last year.
I won't say how many transactions I had, but I see there's a little refresh button next to the report, and I can click that to see if the report is ready for download.
Exactly. And like I said, mine was ready in 15 seconds. How much did you sell last year?
Items?
Yeah.
Probably close to 20.
Really?
And I sold a car.
Good for you. Well, your report should take about a second then. Once the new report is ready, Brian, for downloading, the download link will appear and you can then download the report to your hard drive and then open it. It's formatted as a com-separated value or CSV file, which it'll open in any spreadsheet application, including free ones like Google Sheets if you don't have Excel.
Griff, I have a tip.
Please.
I'm pretty familiar with spreadsheets.
Yeah, I know.
So when you first open a generated spreadsheet report, the columns are usually scrunched together and are hard to read.
Yeah, I know.
You can use your mouse cursor to expand each of them manually.
Ugh.
Or if you're using Excel, you can expand columns automatically to fit the data in each column.
Hmm.
In Excel, first highlight the entire spreadsheet by clicking the box just above the row number 1. Then make sure you are on the home menu. On the home menu bar, look for the section for cells. Click the down arrow next to the format icon and select column width, auto column width. That makes reading the spreadsheet much easier.
It auto sizes all those columns based on the longest bit of data in them, so it's easier to read them. Yeah, I love
that. Exactly.
And if you're using another application to read your report, like, for example, Google Sheets, there's an option that you can use in Google Sheets for adjusting column width automatically. You just select one or more columns that you want to auto fit. then you right-click on any of the selected columns, and then click the Resize Columns option. And in the Resize Column dialog box that opens, select the Fit to Data option, and then click OK. And it does the same thing as it would in Excel. I didn't test this on, I think it's, what is it called? Numbers on a Mac. But I think Mac has the
same. There must be some feature.
Yeah. And your homework is, if you are a Mac user and you're using Numbers, which is their spreadsheet application, is to figure out how it works and then call us and let us know.
And then we'll send you a mug.
Oh, we'll send you more than a mug.
And to your point of tackling the fear of paperwork, you can save this report and either print it out or send a copy of it to your professional that creates your tax filing.
Yeah, a lot of people use tax preparers and they can read this and they can help do the data. If you don't know how to actually, or you're not comfortable doing it yourself, this is one step better than just handing them a box, shoebox of receipts. Or, you know, I don't know what the numbers are. You got to figure them out. Well, you know, they're going to want something. This is a good way to start. Most of the financial data in this spreadsheet, by the way, can be accounted for in some place on your Schedule C. And if you don't know how to do this, your tax preparer can. Or you can go to the IRS website. They tell you how to fill it out as well. There are columns for all eBay expenses, including selling and shipping label fees charged per transaction in this report. And each row of the report is either for an order, like the thing you sold, or a shipping label, or even a transfer of money. So you can sort that column as well.
And if you have some experience working with spreadsheets, you can sum each row of the report as needed to find the total of, say, final value fees charged for the report period.
Yeah, I do that. I didn't want to make this a spreadsheet segment, so but we're happy to give you advice if you need it. You know something, Brian? This is just one report, and it's going to be missing some eBay financials that you might need to show for the year. For example, subscriptions to eBay stores. Your shipping label cost, for example, if you're using PayPal as opposed to
eBay label, eBay,
right? You'll have to go to PayPal for that. That's why I use my pending funds for labels. You'll need to figure your cost for labels where and differentiate where you offered free shipping because you paid for that label and you didn't get reimbursed for it.
Right.
But all that information is there. And there's some other information that is not there that's really important.
Like your off eBay business expenses, like office operations, business supplies, and the all important cost of goods.
Yeah.
What do you pay for that item?
Exactly. And I've got a tip there, and I'm going to share it with you in a minute.
Oh, cool.
Part of a successful bookkeeping system, Brian, for a business is to set a schedule for either generating reports or entering important business data. For example, business expenses separate from eBay expenses, like the ones you just mentioned.
Yep. And these could be receipts for services or supplies or location expenses like rental or improvements.
Yeah. And this is where the hill becomes a mountain for some of us. This is where I start getting freaked out myself.
Papyroergophobia.
That's it. That's what I've got. And the first step in the battle against fear of paperwork is don't let your expense receipts get out of control. First, for paper receipts or records, have one place to put them when they're received. Lots of sellers use a system like this. For example, maybe one of those big compartmented file folders. You can label each of the compartments for either a type of expense or a month of the year. And when you receive an expense receipt, don't put it in a separate drawer. Make sure you're putting it in the same place. Put it in that folder into the associated compartment. Then you know it's safe. This I did get used to doing.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the year, I was driving myself crazy.
And then you're only touching that piece of paper once because you're taking it and you're putting it in the right spot until the end of the year when you need to look at it.
Yeah, that's important.
And if those paper receipts strike fear in your heart.
Oh, they do.
Just be sure to do that one thing. Put them in one central location of a file folder.
You'll be amazed how easy it is to make it a habit that you don't break. And then the second step is to set up a day and time up on a period for a consistent period, for example, weekly or monthly. And you're going to use this for recording those expenses into one location in your software. For example,
you could do a spreadsheet. You put it in a spreadsheet.
You can even put it into the same spreadsheet. You can create a column and put it in there.
Yep. And then some of our sellers probably hand it to their tax preparer, unorganized.
Yeah, they do. They, like I said, a box of. And there's a problem with this because if you're using a tax preparer, and for a lot of our sellers, they actually should be considering this. It can be less work for you to hand them a box of receipts, but it's a lot more work for the preparer. And guess who's going to end up getting charged for that by the hour? You are. They're going to pass that expense on to you. And maybe you don't want that expense. Save yourself money and save everyone some time and just have that system in place so you're organizing it. And then the third step in setting up a record keeping
system. Wait.
What?
Is this a 12-step program?
No. You know, it's way less than the 12 steps because I also suffer from bathmophobia.
Oh, brother. I'm afraid to ask, but I'll bite. What is that?
It's a fear of steps.
So no step program for combating that phobia then?
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no you're right, because it's a built-in circular phobia. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You mentioned earlier a tip you have for recording the cost of goods of your inventory.
Yeah, I may have talked about this already, and I think a lot of sellers have a similar system, but I thought I'd go through it. It wasn't easy, but I made a huge effort to stay consistent with this, and it really paid off. I have a huge inventory of, for example, apparel that I haven't listed. Some of it, it's been there for a couple of years. But because I was on this system every time I went out and sourced apparel, I'm confident that the apparel itself has the record. Here's what I do. Whenever I would buy anything that might be for resale, I would, of course, save the receipt, and then I would fasten it to the item somehow. So if I found a collectible and I was going to put it in storage and I had a receipt for that, I would then safely tape it, or if I could, paperclip it or even staple it, if it's not going to damage the item, to the item itself. I make sure it had the date I purchased it and the price I paid, and if there was any discount applied. So it's there. It's on the item. I feel it's safe. Yeah. Unless my garage burns down, then, you know.
Well, hopefully that will not happen.
But even if it did, I'm covered, right? Business insurance. For example, if it's a new item that I purchased and I had the store tags and it was the price tag, I keep it. And I also write the date on it. And if I did get a discount, I put the percentage of discount. And if it was pre-owned, you know, for example, if you go to like a thrift store like right. Savers or Goodwill, the price is already on that tag. I keep the tag on it, and then I would write the date. At one point, I was using a stamp, so it looked better. I would stamp the date on it, but I moved to felt pen for that. And this was really important. If there was no price tag on the item, like I might have picked it up at a garage sale or something, I would make my own tag and attach it to the item with the information. Then, whenever I listed that item, I would take a photo of the tag along with all the other photos of that article of apparel or that collectible before removing them. You know, you don't want to send the item off to with the tag on it, right?
Right.
You paid $600. I only paid $50. You don't want that in there. But that photo record was and still is valid and important. And I keep that when I'm listing the item, I see that photo. I'm not going to list. I almost did once accidentally.
List the photo.
Yeah, put the photo up.
Photo of the tag.
Yeah, again, stupid me. I caught myself in time. But when I list the item, I would then copy that information from the photo showing the tag, price, and the date of purchase into the custom label field in the listing form.
It's a really good system, but it may not work for everyone. But what matters is that whatever system you use for recording your business numbers, you employ it completely and consistently.
And like I said earlier, you got to keep it simple, because if it gets too complicated, it's going to be hard to make a habit out of it.
Exactly.
So if it's simple, it's much easier to get into the habit of it. I became obsessed with getting that information on tags. I'm so glad I do, because, you know, I think I have a couple thousand shirts I haven't listed.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's been a rough 5 years.
Yeah.
But I plan on it, and I will get to it. One of the things I don't worry about is I know exactly what I paid for everything, because all of the tags are there with the information.
That's perfect.
I mean, I could also put it into a spreadsheet, but, you know, there's a problem with that when it comes to inventory. How do you connect it without a photo?
Right.
With a photo of the tag and the item, I can say, oh, yeah, that's that shirt, that's that label. In shirts, I would always put the tag. It's usually right below the label.
Right.
So it actually has the size, too. And even for shirts, I would double duty those tags. I wish Savers made bigger tags at the time, because I had to put a lot of information. When I measured the shirt, I would put the measurements.
Smart.
Yeah. So it's all on that tag.
Well, the other thing that's nice about that is, let's say you ever did lose, like if you had an electronic version of that and you lost it, you have a built-in backup.
Yeah. That's just one example. But I love my system. It's pretty simple. One location for paper, one location for soft data. I still use a big compartmentalized envelope for those receipts. That envelope is emptier every year as more and more of my stuff is moved to
electronic.
Yeah, electronic.
And another tip is like really to set a calendar reminder for entering data into an application like a spreadsheet.
Oh, yes.
And for downloading reports on a regular basis for tracking paper expenses.
Yeah.
For example, I have a regular Outlook alarm set for the last day of each month to generate a monthly report for all my selling data to compile and enter other expenses not tracked by eBay. And I don't sell a ton like you do.
Yeah.
And we have lots of sellers that sell a lot, even more than 400 items.
Oh, yes.
So for me,
piker.
It's just like, okay, keep track of it.
Yeah. Whatever works, just make sure you're consistent. And if you employ a tax preparer, save time and money by compiling your numbers on a regular basis as opposed to sending them boxes of receipts and spreadsheets.
There are a few other report options that you should explore besides the one we focused on today. For example, in the payments tab, we just looked at the report options for the reports tab, but there are two other tabs for statements and invoices that you should explore.
Yeah.
The reports under statements show monthly statement that you can view and download as PDF summaries or full statements. These contain monthly totals for all your funds, including funds spent for labels.
Right. And that's easily transferred into any spreadsheet that you're using to track monthly expenses, for example. And the invoice tab on that page, by the way, it shows monthly statements of charges to your account as well. I would recommend downloading both of these and saving them for use later. I mean, what do you have to lose?
Exactly.
And they're usually available now for about 2 years. I think that's our rolling window,
the look back.
Yeah.
Look back period.
At the very least, please take a few minutes to explore each one to better determine if they're going to be useful to you at tax time. One of the bits of advice I'm always giving anyone, myself included, is when you're faced with a new web page, explore the hell out of it.
Right.
Click
you
every.
You won't break it.
You're not going to break it, but you're going to learn so much. I think there's still a lot of people that have a fear of web pages, and excuse me if I don't know the Latin for that phobia.
I was going to say, what was that ergo?
I have no idea.
So if you have any questions about creating a record-keeping system to help you with paperwork, or if you have a system of your own that you would like to share with other sellers, let us know. Send an email to podcast@ebay.com or call it in on 888-723-4630.
Ooh. I've got a tip that I'm going to share next week. It's an Excel tip. So for those of you who use Excel, and I didn't know about this till I was researching all this and I discovered it. I just learned a new tip that can make recording and tracking the cost of goods and the date of purchase for inventory even easier to record inside the eBay spreadsheet using that column for custom label. It's amazing. And
I'm really interested.
I'm going to hold it for next week.
You got questions?
Well, we've got answers on a weekly basis.
Are they in Greek or Latin?
They're in English.
Good.
I promise.
So what's lined up in the questions queue this week, Griff?
Brian, we have four questions, three of which we're going to answer. And then the fourth and final question, we're going to turn over to somebody else to provide their response. Now, our first question is from eBay seller Steve. Hey, would you do the honors?
I'd be happy to. Okay. So this email was sent to podcast@ebay.com by seller Steve. Hello, Griff and the podcast team. I've been a casual seller for years, and I'm now hoping to make selling on eBay my full-time job. I was very excited to find this podcast that connects me directly to the horse's mouth, so to speak. I have two questions, so hopefully that will qualify me for at least one mug.
One mug, definitely. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I've heard you mention more than once about the weight limit for USPS first class being 16 ounces. All the information I can find says that limit for first class is 13 ounces. Am I misinformed? And then I've been catching up on older episodes and heard reference to seller school. Is that still a thing? I've been wading my way through the various seller help topics, but it would be great if there were organized classes I could take. Thank you, Steve. Well, Steve, the retail USPS rates for first class package limit the weight to 13 ounces. So if you go to the USPS website,
or you go to their store location,
right. Yeah. You will see only that rate with a weight maximum of 13 ounces. But if you purchase your USPS FCP label through eBay Labels, the weight maximum is indeed 16 ounces and an extra bonus. Labels that are purchased through eBay Labels are subject to reduced USPS commercial rates, which saves you money. You can read more on the Seller Center page for shipping labels, the link to which we will post in the transcript for episode 181. What a great question.
Yeah, that was a good one. And again, we'll have that link if you need to learn more. And Steve, there's good news here also about eBay Seller School. It is indeed still a thing. In fact, this is not just a thing. It's a free thing. It's called eBay Seller School, like you heard, and it's open to every seller. And you can find it at sellerschool.ebay.com. Check it out. It's free. There's tons of different modules and courses. And I want to give a plug for the team that does this, and I'll tell you why.
They do a great job.
They are amazing at what they do. there's been a lot of very talented people over the last 20 years at eBay that have really tried to create content management system for education on eBay. I've been involved peripherally with a few of those projects, and it always ends up never coming to fruition for whatever reason.
Or something happens and then it doesn't get updated for ever again and gets stale and old.
And I know that this has been very frustrating, not only for sellers, but the fine talented people at eBay that were here that worked on them. This team has pulled it off, and it's pulled it off in a way that I think is actually, I think it's a flagship example of what online education for a specific topic, like, for example, selling on eBay, how well it can be done. I cannot stress this enough. If you're a new seller, or even if you're an experienced seller, please, you have nothing to lose. It's free. They're very efficient. You can view them on your own time. I guarantee, no matter how smart you think you are, you're going to probably learn something new.
So what's that address again?
Sellerschool.ebay.com.
So a difficult one to remember. Sellerschool.ebay.com.
Yeah, finally we get URLs that make sense. Oh, our next question comes from eBay seller Gary, who sent this email to podcast@ebay.com. Hey, Griffin crew, I'm trying to figure out fees. Most collectibles are in the 12% final value fee range. I think I avoid the 30-cent item listing fee with the Anchor store. But how much are managed payment fees? I called managed payments, and they told me that most sellers are around the 12 to 12.55% average. But this seems low in light of the fact that PayPal was 30 cents plus 2.9%. Please advise. P.S. I'm looking forward to an eBay mug for those early mornings checking in with my customers on eBay. Signed, Gary. Well, a mug is on the way to everyone who sent questions this week. Gary, your mug's on the way.
Definitely. And good news for you, Gary. There's no managed payment fee that's separate from your other fees. eBay does not charge a separate fee for payment processing through eBay Payments. This elimination of a 2.9 transaction fee was one of the main benefits of eBay Payments, formerly known as managed payments. You can see the list of applicable selling fees on the Selling Fees Help and Contact page. We'll post a link directly to that help page in the transcript for episode 181.
Yeah, and it's a long URL, so it would put you to sleep if we started reading it. But you can also find that page pretty easy, and this is a good habit to get into. Just click on the help and contact link on the top of just about any eBay page, and then you can enter a keyword, for example, in this case, fees. Just enter that, and the seller fees link to that page just shows right up on the top.
And you know, it's interesting, since earlier we were talking about kind of tracking costs and things like that, one of the other things is this simplifies it. You don't have to track separate fees for your payments plus this. It's just all one to sell on eBay.
Yeah, and we couldn't do that when it was a separate payment processing through PayPal. Yeah. And in Seller Hub, by the way, you can go to Seller Hub Payments, and you can always view the breakdown of fees for any sale. So you go to Seller Hub Payments, and there's a link. It's not that difficult. It's ebay.com/SH for Seller Hub, and then /FIN.
For finance.
For finance. This is your financial summaries page. You can scroll down to the recent transactions section and find any order. Click the arrow to the right, and it will open a page for that transaction. And you can see on that page all of the fees as line items that were debited for that transaction. So you'll know, this is what I paid to sell that.
That's
on
great.
eBay. Yeah. Now, our third question is from eBay seller Flow_Mingo. So Flow Mingo. I can think I see where that's going.
Wonder if they live in Florida.
And Flow, no doubt. They sent this missive to podcast@ebay.com. And Brian, this is a long one, so I thought we'd break it up.
Sounds good.
I'll read the first half. Flow_Mingo writes, every morning I start my day at my computer, eagerly signing into eBay to see what was sold while I was sleeping. How many offers can I send out? And then the speed bump of addressing the over 500 requests or recommendations for item specifics. In the beginning, I filled in every possible detail to get the blue circle with the lightning bolt. Then I heard you say on the podcast not to fill in boxes with NA or any version thereof, and to leave those boxes empty. For 2 months, I started each morning clicking the Please Do Not Remind Me Again box on hundreds of items it took to get those reminders off my selling page. I found that every morning I was starting my day with a frustrating, annoying task. After 18 years with eBay, I was no longer enjoying our morning get-togethers. I tried ignoring them. I really did. I stopped for 7 days. Oh, and by the way, when I did my sales stop too, my list of reminders grew to almost 1,000. I returned to clearing them out with, please do not remind me again. And some of my sales returned. Coincidence?
I will continue from Flamingo. And now the question for the coveted cup. Oh, I like that. The coveted cup. Wow. She gets two.
She gets two?
You sure? You think? Coming up with coveted cup.
All righty. And all that work she had to do editing those.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. We'll send you two cups. Two mugs.
So her question, is there a way to bulk edit the Do Not Remind Me Again tab? If not, can eBay create a bulk edit feature or a drop out of reminders option?
Oh, such a good idea.
Experienced sellers know the specifics that pertain to their items.
Yes.
Boxes that were not filled in did not apply. The reminders are tedious and frustrating. Thanks for listening. Char Oper, eBay ID Flamingo. I'm not going to argue with her. I think she's spot on.
Oh, I am so much in your boat. That is the most frustrating experience. And I'm sorry, I think we have some slightly bad news. And then some not so bad news. So first off, this slightly bad news. Before I even get to that, let me immediately disabuse you of the notion that unadopted recommended item specifics somehow negatively impact you in search or were a cause in your dip in sales. The item specific recommendation reminders have absolutely nothing to do with the dip in sales or in search ranking. I've always cautioned sellers, and I always will, to never draw causation from correlation. So yes, it is a coincidence. And when a seller, by the way, when they do ask me these things and say, what's going on here? I always point them to their traffic report in Seller Hub, where they can see their traffic to and all of their items, each individually in aggregate. And they can see for themselves, if there was a dip in traffic, then we could look closer to it. But in most cases, there isn't. When those sales aren't being made, it's just that people may, they're finding your items, but the right buyers just don't happen to be around for that period of time.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that adding a relevant item-specific recommendation has no impact.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
The added relevant, and I emphasize relevant here, can indeed result in your item showing up in more buyer searches, which could result in a sale that might not otherwise happen.
Yeah.
But not adopting recommended item specifics does not result in any negative impact in your search ranking or result in lower sales.
Yeah. And we strongly recommend against using any form of NA or not applicable in place of an actual relevant item specific label or value. The rule is, if it isn't relevant to your item, leave it blank.
And good advice.
Yeah. Don't give any thought to the blue circle and the lightning bolt. It's not a game that you're trying to win here. You don't want to be putting in unrelated. A lot of sellers are doing this. They're like filling in information that doesn't have anything to do with the item. That's actually not going to work for your item. If it doesn't relate to your item or the information doesn't exist for your item, leave it blank.
I just went through this. I listed something where I kept getting the little reminder. There are a pair of shoes and it's 2/3 full. And I keep going back. Like 3 times I went back saying, what am I missing? And then I realized I'm not missing anything.
Yeah. I don't think it was a bad idea necessarily, gamification of that to get people to adopt it. I could see a new seller benefiting from this because they may be leaving out an item specific that's actually recommended, not one that's required. That I can see as a case. But I think if you're an experienced seller, you should be able to opt out of those reminders. The sellers know what they're doing.
Right. And we require the ones that we know are required.
Super required. Yeah, right. Important. Yes.
And so go through the recommended ones, but don't worry about filling the blue circle.
Exactly. And Char, I'm so sorry. Yeah. There is no way to edit them in bulk. And I get just as annoyed. I don't have as many listings as you do, but you know, I'll have 100 to 200 up at a time. And after I've listed like 10 or so, I have to go in and I would think, oh, you know, should I ignore these? Because it says recommended item specifics, or should I go in? And you do. Like she said, you have to go in and click and check the box for don't remind me again, because there's no way to bulk edit them. But I did find a surefire way of getting rid of them.
What? How?
It's easy. You can actually remove the item specifics column from the active view.
Are you kidding me?
No, you can. On the active view page, if you scroll down to the header for that says results on the top of that list of your listings, and then you scan your eye to the right, you're going to see a link for customize table. Click it, And then this little pop-up box will show up. And just uncheck the box for the column that's for item specifics. Click save. And voila! That pesky column, along with all its annoying reminders, is gone! Poof! Bye-bye! You never have to see them again.
Now I'm thinking,
What?
Should I have co-hosted this week?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not sure the product team's going to appreciate that little bit of advice. But
hey,
you know what? If it's really annoying, that annoying to somebody, it's an option.
Yeah. It's your active view page. We've provided the customization. Just right. Get rid of the column.
The only caution I would give, I think, on that one is if you're a newer seller,
yeah. You
know, deal with some of the annoyance until you're really confident that you've got the recommended ones down.
Yeah, because a seller does have that control, and that's what's important. Yeah. If there is information on the page you would rather not see, by the way, not just that column, you can uncheck any of those columns and the information no longer appears. You can also sort the columns. So there's some information. Like, I don't care about bids because I don't use the auction format, so I'd uncheck that box. I also don't care about the date I listed it so much every day, so I moved that column over to the right where I don't see it. You can have the columns that mean the most for you in ActiveView arranged so that they're the first four or five columns, and so then you all see
it. It's like an Excel spreadsheet. You can move those columns around.
Just like an Excel spreadsheet.
With recommended item specifics, it's out of sight, out of mind for you.
Yes, whatever works. And finally, Brian, before we end our show this week, you know, I fear sometimes that eBay sellers think that we're the fountain of all eBay wisdom.
I don't think there's any fear of that, Griff.
Well, maybe.
Well, actually, I can see him thinking that with you.
Yeah, and that would be false because appearances in that case are everything and they're not always correct. And to be as candid as possible, I actually don't know the answers to about half the questions we get here at the podcast desk. I continue to get questions that are just not necessarily unusual or strange, but they're about topics that I hadn't even thought about. It's always fun, but for those, I can't just off the top of my head give an answer. I don't know. And sometimes I research and I can't find the answer, so I have to find the answer somewhere else. And our next guest is someone I go to a lot. And earlier today, in fact, I was able to coax him to join me and help answer a question that had me totally stumped. So it's with great pleasure that I announce a new recurring segment, which is Let's Ask Tyler. Welcome, Tyler.
Thank you. It's really good to finally be on the podcast.
Anyway, Tyler, we received this email last week, and I actually have to admit I've heard this from sellers before, but I wasn't quite sure the what or the why. Let me read the email. It came from a seller named Robbie. Griff, when receiving an offer, sometimes the username has the location beside it, and sometimes it doesn't. Why is that? Mm. I like to know the ship-to location to decide if the offer will be worth it when factoring in shipping. Thanks for all the information you share. Rob, P.S., I wouldn't turn down an eBay mug. I know you wouldn't, Rob, and you're on the list to get one. So that's from Rob, and I have to confess, I couldn't find an answer. So I thought, oh, I don't know. Let's ask Tyler.
And you did, and I was able to look into this issue. And there are two possible scenarios involving offers.
Ah.
The first is when a buyer sends a seller an unsolicited offer through my messages, which I'm sure you get all the time.
I do, yeah.
In this scenario, the seller may not have added the best offer feature to their listing. The buyer clicked on contact seller and sent the seller a message through my messages and a typed message containing an offer.
Yeah, I get those a lot, as you said. They always go like, hey, would you take $10 for this $50 item? And I'm usually like, no, but thanks for asking. Have a nice day.
Exactly. Right. Those unsolicited offers sent in a message contained the location of the buyer by providing the buyer's registered city and state. It's on a line at the bottom of the message usually.
Yeah, I've noticed that. There's also a reply with offer button there too.
Yes. If a seller chooses to engage the buyer, they can use that button to bring the message into the best offer flow.
Ah. All right.
The second scenario that I found is that any offer sent through the best offer process, including listing an item with best offer added, or sending what are known as seller-initiated offers through Seller Hub to the 30 most recent watchers of that item, as well as any buyer that has that item in their shopping cart for at least 2 days.
That's a huge number of scenarios, right?
Yeah, no, it's a pretty big second scenario.
Yeah.
These offers don't display any location information for the buyer.
Oh, that doesn't seem right. Should we let the best offer product team know?
Yes. And I did yesterday, and they let me know that they're looking into this. I made the case that many sellers need to know the buyer's physical location by zip code or something very exact, so they can determine the optimum negotiating window.
Yeah, of course.
Shipping is going to be a lot different for you if they're very close by versus if they're across the country.
Exactly. And depending on the value of the item, this can make a difference when you're trying to calculate how much window or wiggle room do I have here when I'm negotiating an offer. When sending a seller-initiated offer, there's also this other issue, because a seller really can't know the location of all of those 30 most recent watchers and all of those buyers who may have had the item in the shopping cart for at least 2 days. What do they do?
Exactly. Those sellers have most likely taken any shipping costs into consideration when sending the offer out. But for sellers who list an item with best offer and then receive an offer, a lot of those sellers want to know the buyer's location before they respond.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. So what can those sellers do if they don't have the buyer's location today?
If the location is critical information that you need in negotiation, a seller can always ask the buyer for that information. The best offer flow doesn't provide space for those types of messages, but there is a workaround.
Oh dear, what is it?
Well, a seller can click on the buyer's user ID to view their profile. From there, the seller can click the contact link for that buyer and send them a separate message requesting their zip code or city and state.
Ah, kind of a workaround indeed.
A little bit.
Yeah.
The seller can then wait for the buyer to respond and determine their next move, which would be accept, decline, counteroffer.
I can imagine doing that. I have to admit, though, that's a bit cumbersome. You kind of have to go out of the flow and then get back into it.
It is a little clunky, but until such time as the buyer location information is shown for every best offer scenario, it's the best way to get the information from the buyer.
Well, I hope, Rob, that is somewhat of a help until such time as the product team has actually added that information, which we hope they will, right?
No, always.
Yes, always. Well, Tyler, thanks so much. We are ever so grateful, at least I am, every day for your expertise and experience. I have to rely on a lot of people. One of those persons that I have to rely on a lot is you, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm happy to help. And until the next time you hit me up in Slack.
Which will be next week, you watch.
It will be.
Tyler Langston works in our GCX organization here at eBay, as well as with many sellers. You may have met him on our community forums when he joins there to chat. And he'll be back with us soon to help answer your burning questions, those questions that, quite frankly, I can't answer. And you can send them to podcast@ebay.com or call us at 888-723-4630. Brian, what do you think of Let's Ask Tyler?
I think it's great. And you know that I lean on Tyler as well throughout the week. He gets Slack messages from me and or emails, but yeah. He's wonderful, great person. And we should let our listeners know, GCX stands for Global Customer Support.
Right. It's just a weird acronym. I'm sorry we forgot to define it. You can also catch Tyler. I think he still makes appearances at 1 o'clock on Wednesdays for the community chat. He's one of the calmest, most level-headed people at eBay. And he's a pillar of strength we can all lean on, and we appreciate it. I think we've really built Tyler up enough now, don't you think?
I don't know. I think we should build him up every week.
Well, I find it's a lot of fun building people up.
So if you want to join the fun here on eBay for Business, call us on 888-723-4630.
And we're not getting enough calls. We're getting a lot of emails, but please, we'd love to talk with you on the line or get your voice on the air. But maybe we could call you back and we can actually have a live call. But anyway, the best part of that number, 888-723-4630, is you can call at any time. It's always open, any day of the week, any time of the day. Just leave a question or a comment, and we might just put it on the air.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Oh, I was going to look it up. What's the fear of talking on the phone? Telephobia? Anyway, don't forget, it's time for your daily unbranded podcast to-do list.
Always check the announcement board or subscribe to it for up-to-date seller news.
And it's never too late to start a new system or maybe revamp and renovate a system you're currently using for capturing and organizing your eBay sales and expense data. You'll be glad you did.
Forgot the links we mentioned? You can always check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode. And you can find that transcript on community.ebay.com.
All right, and just go to the podcast link, find the episode in question, open it, and there's a link for transcript in it. It's a long text file. If you don't want to listen to the sound of our voices, but would rather just read it, I know
you can do that
sometimes. You can just read the transcript. And don't forget, by the way, to stop by our new Discuss This podcast page on the community, where you can post your comment or question on any of the topics or questions and answers from that week's episode. Just go to www.ebay.com/podcast, and up on the right, click the drop-down link for Discuss This podcast.
We'd like to again thank our guest this week, our new correspondent from the eBay Global Customer Support Team, Tyler Langston.
eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.